Our guest speaker today is Reverend Jennifer Dalton. Jennifer was born and raised in the mountains of Virginia. Spiritually, she was raised Mormon and Southern Baptist. She spent 4 years as an aircraft technician in the United States Air Force before completing her bachelor's degree in political science. Her Master of Divinity degree from Emory's Candler School of Theology. She is currently ordained and recognized by the Alliance of Baptists and considers herself a Unitarian Universalist Baptist. She's been married for 19 years, has 3 children, and they all live with 3 dogs and many cats. Jennifer is currently working at Atlanta Medical Center as a patient advocate. We all love Jennifer and we're glad you're here. Welcome.
Morning. I've had a love affair with heroes for as long as I can remember. My first hero worship experience was The Incredible Hulk. Some of y'all are old enough to remember, but I would watch the show week after week, and mild-mannered David Banner would show up in small towns and inevitably stumble upon some evildoer. David was peaceful and would try to address the issue in as peaceful a manner as possible. But inevitably, the evildoer would push him too far. And David would say, "Please don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry." And then he would transform into the Incredible Hulk. And he would smash a bunch of stuff and save the day. I still remember a report I was asked to do in 4th grade. We had to list 5 heroes and orally speak about our top 3. I still remember because both Tony Moorfield and I listed Hulk Hogan, a professional wrestler, in our top 3. Indeed, all of my heroes were patron saints of masculinity. I remember Hulk Hogan, Clint Eastwood, and Ronald Reagan. They all made the list. Because in the place I grew up, hero had a certain meaning. A hero was first of all male. Never would have occurred to me that a woman could be a hero. They were all strong, very traditional pictures of masculinity. Fighters, soldiers, tough guys. Inevitably, the hero used fists or guns. He was macho and fearless. And they would swoop in to save the day, making right the world's wrongs, and then move on to their next adventure. Childhood was, for me, a pretty simple time. And my ideas about what made a person great were pretty simple. Truthfully, as a kid, the world was simple. There was lots of black and white, good and evil. And I was too young, so very young, to try to understand shades of gray. But I grew older and the world seemed to get more complicated. I read more books. I became more fascinated with both politics and history. And the more I learned about political science, and especially history, the more complex my ideas about the world became. Black and white was replaced by 1,000 shades of gray. And possibly, because I'm an optimist, I found heroes everywhere I looked. But they didn't have big muscles or big guns. And so my idea about what makes a hero had to change too. I learned that sometimes a hero is a woman who is exhausted from a day of work and refuses to give up her seat on the bus. I learned that a hero can be a man not with guns or fists, but a man who can preach nonviolence in the face of violent oppressors. I visited the Vietnam Memorial when I was a very young airman. And I realized that sometimes heroes are soldiers who face battle. But as I stood there and I stared at all of those names on the memorial, I realized sometimes the hero is the person that can stand up and speak out against popular war as well. Being a hero was a lot more complicated than David Banner turning into the Incredible Hulk and smashing a lot of things and making the world right again. And right and wrong were a lot more complicated than my comic books and professional wrestling had led me to believe. I remember being all of 15, and my study of history made me feel weary and old. 15, and longing for the days when Hulk could smash and make the world a little bit better. When we talk about complicated history, this month, the month of October, is LGBTQ History Month. This June 2019, 50 American pioneers, trailblazers, and heroes were inducted onto the National LGBTQ Wall of Honor within the Stonewall National Monument in New York City Stonewall Inn. The monument is the first dedicated to LGBTQ rights in history. The monument was timed to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I was in college, and late in college, when I learned about the Stonewall riots. Not because they weren't a turning point in American history, but because, as my queer child put it, "Mama, no one cares about queer history." The year for Stonewall was 1969. And Stonewall Inn was a gay bar purportedly run by the mafia, who would pay off the police, who would warn them about the upcoming raids. But mafia or payoffs aside, there were always raids because gay bars were illegal. And Stonewall was one of the few gay bars that would welcome drag queens. It catered to an assortment of patrons and was known to be popular among the poorest and the most marginalized people of the gay community. Drag queens, transgender people, effeminate young men, butch lesbians, male prostitutes, homeless youth. When the police would routinely raid, and their tactics towards these people were brutal. It was illegal to dress in drag in New York at the time, so all of the drag queens would be arrested and thrown in jail immediately. No one actually knows what happened the night of Stonewall. There are different stories, different perspectives, many of which contradict each other. But that night, what we know is the patrons fought back. I found this description online. The raid did not go as planned. Standard procedure was to line up the patrons, check their identification, and have female police officers take customers dressed as women to the bathroom to verify their sex. Upon which, any men dressed as women would immediately be arrested. That night, those dressed as women refused to go with the police officers. Men who were in line refused to produce their identification. The police made the decision to take everyone back to the police station. Maria Ritter, who was then known as Male to her family, recalled, "My biggest fear was that I would get arrested. My second biggest fear was that my picture would be in a newspaper or on a television report in my mother's dress." Both patrons and police recalled that a sense of discomfort spread very quickly. And it was spurred on by the police, who began to assault some of the lesbians by feeling them up inappropriately while frisking them. That night, those who were not arrested were released from the front door, but they didn't leave as usual. Instead, they stopped outside and a crowd began to grow and watch. Within minutes, between 100 and 150 people had congregated outside, some after they were released, and some after noticing the police cars in the crowd. Although the police forcefully pushed or kicked some patrons out of the bar, some of the customers released by the police started to perform for the crowd by posing, saluting the police in exaggerating fashion. The crowd's applause encouraged them further. One description reads, "Wrists were limp, hair was primped, and reactions to the applause were classic. All day the next day, people would come to stare at the burned and blackened Stonewall Inn. Graffiti appeared on the walls of the bar immediately, declaring drag power. They invaded our rights, support gay power, and legalize gay bars, along with accusations of police looting, and regardless of the status of the bar, signs that said, "We are open." That next night, rioting would again break out on Christopher Street. Participants remember differently which night was more frantic or violent. Many of the same people returned from the previous evening, hustlers, street youths, and queens, and they were joined by police provocateurs, curious bystanders, and it's New York, there were even tourists. Remarkable to many was the sudden exhibition of homosexual affection in public. As described by one witness, from going to places where you had to knock on a door and speak to someone through a peephole to get in, we were just out. We were there. We were in the streets. Out of those riots, so many unlikely heroes arose. Two of them were Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. They were two street queens. Now, Johnson, up until her death, would deny starting any of the fighting on the first night. But there are legends. Legends that Marsha P. Johnson threw her shot glass against a wall and shouted, as she would later be filmed shouting, "I want my gay rights." Both Johnson and Rivera became well known in the community after Stonewall. And it occurred to me while reading this that they could have rested on their relative fame in the community. But Stonewall started something. Stonewall had sparked a movement. Stonewall would be the beginning of a movement for gay rights that was not based on assimilation into straight culture, but was based on the freedom to be essentially who you are. The very first Pride celebration on June 28, 1970 was called the Christopher Street Liberation Day, and it was a celebration of Stonewall and the Queens, who essentially led the charge against the police a year earlier. Johnson and Rivera continued to be outspoken activists in the community. They started STAR, Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. With the money they themselves made as sex workers, they established a shelter for gay and trans street kids in 1972. And while the house was not performance-based, Marsha P. Johnson would serve as a drag mother to those kids. In a long-standing tradition of chosen family in the Black and Latino LGBTQ communities. I could go on and on about these two women, their contributions, the groups they were involved in, their AIDS activism. And the truth is, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera were two street queens who spent their lives serving their community. Their community was the poorest of the poor. They were the outcast among the outcast, and both of them strengthened that community and made its voice heard in a nation that desperately wanted to pretend it didn't exist. I think of Johnson and Rivera, and I think of the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures. I'm reminded of the story of Moses. If you read it, he initially didn't want to free the Israelites. He wanted to stay home where he was. And there was Gideon, who was such a coward that every time God gave him a sign to send him out to do something, he asked for another sign because he didn't want to do it. And there was David, who was a great king and an adulterer and a murderer. And yet in the stories, God grabs them. God grabs imperfect people. And the work of God is done not even despite their imperfections, but sometimes through those very imperfections. Marsha P. Johnson was not perfect. She was a street queen who struggled with drug abuse and mental illness. She was known to pack a punch and carried bricks in her purse. On one occasion, when being arrested for hustling, she actually assaulted two police officers with a brick-packed purse. But she was also larger than life. And her presence was enough to help spark a revolution and the stuff that legends would be made of. The world is itself a complicated place. And heroes are not simple characters that swoop in to save the day. Heroes aren't perfect. They're often complicated. It's a woman who refuses to give up her seat on a bus. It is a 95-year-old ex-president who spends his time building houses for the poor. It's a street queen that stands up and uses her voice and her presence to amplify the voices of her community. What makes them heroes isn't that they're perfect. It's that they're able to see the imperfections in the world around them and they stand up and do what they can to make a difference. Every year, and I don't know if y'all have come to Atlanta before for the parade, but we celebrate here in Atlanta with a beautiful, outlandish pride parade. Costumes, music, joy abounds. If you haven't been, I would challenge you to go and find me a place with more joy, more exuberance, more love. And every year, there are more and more corporate sponsors. And every year, there are more and more churches with floats. LGBTQIA acceptance is moving forward. But even as we celebrate, it's worth remembering that Pride didn't start with a parade. It started when a group of outcasts in a seedy bar owned by the mafia, known for harboring outcasts, could no longer take the abuse from the authorities. It started when women like Marsha P. Johnson said, no more. It started with imperfect people, when the unlikeliest of heroes stood up to use their voice. Right now in the Supreme Court, justices are considering whether or not sexual orientation is protected under the Equal Rights Act of 1965. In 2018, advocates tracked at least 26 deaths of transgender people in the U.S. due to fatal violence, the majority of whom were black transgender women. 41% of transgender people will attempt suicide. Homeless youth service providers report that 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ. The truth is, we've come a long way since Stonewall, but we still have a long way to go. And we can look back to the work of women like Marsha P. Johnson, and we can know that heroes have paved the way for us. They paved the way, but there's still more road to build. There's still more work to be done. And it would be great, because I'm a kid at heart. It would be truly great if I could count on David Banner. And he would swoop in and he would smash a few things. Maybe a few people, just saying. And he would make equality a reality. But the thing I've learned about heroes is that the greatest heroes aren't professionals. They aren't perfect figures who save the day for a living. They're people just like you and just like me. Wonderful, imperfect people like Marsha Pay It No Mind Johnson, who decided they've had enough. And they use their voices and their lives to do the next right thing. And the gift about learning that heroes are everyday people with everyday imperfections is we get to stop waiting for David Banner. We get to stop sitting around and waiting for the perfect hero to swoop in and save the day. And we can stop looking for easy answers and actually see the difficult task that's in front of us. And maybe, if we can see it, then we too will have had enough of injustice, enough of hatred, enough of discrimination. Then we can look into the mirror, we can embrace our own imperfections, and we can learn to use our voices, and we can learn to be the hero that we've been waiting for. Amen, shalom, and blessed be.
Does anyone have any questions? Open for discussion? Anybody have anything they'd like to say or ask Jennifer? Casey?
I'd just like to mention that a lot of our congregants know that we are a welcoming congregation. They may not actually, know what that means. Back when we were at Walnut Mountain, we applied to the LBGT, I don't think it was Q then, committee at the UUA to become certified as a welcoming congregation to the LGBTQ community. And went through a long program to get approved on that. And this is actually very good because we're supposed to do a few programs every year. So thank you very much. And also, that is what LGBT, what our welcoming community is. Actually, when you welcome the LGBT community, you pretty much are welcoming everybody because they are represented in some form or fashion in that community.
There are no coincidences. I think it was last night, Kay and I were watching something she had taped from PBS about two gay men. One was, and they were, not young anymore, but the one who almost went to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, oh yeah, we can treat you with shock therapy. And at the time, being gay was considered a mental illness. Mm-hmm. Look how far we've come.
Well, on that topic, actually, we haven't come as far as we would like. Just last week, a judge in Tampa reaffirmed the fact that conversion therapy can be forced on minor children by their parents.
Florida.
So, in Florida. So, we still have a long way to go. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Patrick?
There's many good programs on like Netflix, possibly Prime also if you subscribe to those things, on the subject matter of Stonewall documentary type stuff, which would give you an idea of what it was all about and kind of give you an insight. Even, as I'm a gay man, and gave me insight on it, because I was very young back then and didn't know anything about it. So it really, there's a lot of stuff out there today. I'm thankful for that.
We have come light years from when we were children. We've come light years in 10 years. As I spoke earlier about John and I lived in Huntsville, Alabama, before we moved here. 10 years ago when John and I met, we could have never imagined we'd be able to get married, ever. Especially in Alabama. But luckily, Roy Moore was kicked to the curb for the second time. And we were allowed to fulfill our dreams and get married, which afforded us the opportunity to retire and move to the mountains of Georgia. So we have come a long way, but we still have ways to go before everyone is considered valuable and pertinent in our society.
And equal.
And equal.